It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Thank you for tuning in to the It's Going Down podcast. We're joined here today with Radical Education Department, or RED. I don't know if is it a new project. Just talk a little bit about it. How many people are in it? How to get started? And what is it?
So it started about a year ago. A group of us coalesced around a direct action, and originally it kind of brought together a number of activists from a broad kind of pan-leftist perspective. So Maoists, anarchists, general kind of socialists, Antifa people. And after that kind of moment of coalescence, over a year ago now, we decided that we needed to build an organization in order to move things forward. And we were interested in doing something that had more of a kind of positive project, in the sense that we wanted to go on the offensive instead of just being on the defensive. As important as Antifa struggles are, and we're all invested in them, we thought that a more positive offensive struggle, in which we begin to build alternative platforms in various ways, was important. And so we've been growing that over the course of the last year or so. And our activities are quite diverse. I mean, we've been involved in the continuation of direct action, participation protests, and things like this. But we also have kind of begun working as a, I guess you'd call it, an anti-capitalist research collective, in which we share strategy papers, kind of working dossiers on contemporary politics, mainly oriented around tactical and strategical questions. And we're also invested in a kind of guerrilla education and bringing education to a kind of broader, groups, and or using education, I should say, as a way of creating connections between different groups so that we can work across a certain sectarianism that at times has hamstrung the left. And so our latest projects are around coalition building, and I think that's some of the stuff that you want to talk about today with the recent zine that Art wrote for us.
Right. Well, just to get started, at the start of the essay you write, quote, "Socio-political fascism is on the rise," again giving the question fresh urgency, "but that rise is the result of the basic structures of neoliberal capital. Fascism is the ruling class's attempt to tame a basic contradiction." Can you expand what you mean on this, you know, taming the basic contradiction, and give us some examples?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So so it's helpful to place where we are today and anarchism today in the U.S. in a historical context. So, we're facing now a decline of the neoliberal project that came about at the end of the 60s, early mid 70s, where, you know, the post-war boom was starting to fall apart, rates of profit were falling, and capital was experiencing this slowing growth, and at the same time, ramping up exploitation of workers, control over the workplace, and society's way of addressing this, leading to these massive explosions of people of color, women of color, feminism, workers, students. And so neoliberalism emerges in the late 60s, 70s as this attempt to restore profitability, to crush social movements, reassert a kind of a control, and to increase profit and growth again. But now here we are in 2018, and what we're finding is that that project, which failed to restore profit rates to what they were in the post-war boom, is now falling apart again. Capitalists have resorted to financialization in an extremely risky and fragile way in order to try to overcome the limits that it's experiencing. Because it's slashing social programs, because it's decimated traditional avenues of letting off sort of radical steam and protest, more and more we're finding a concentration and a congealing of radical struggle. And it's this sort of crisis-ridden moment of capital that we're living in now, both social and economic crises, that fascism emerges. And so the contradiction that I mean here is that capital simultaneously generates this extreme economic, ecological, and social crises, but at the same time then tries to, in social political fascism, mobilize the dissatisfaction of these crises in order to tame them. So, the goal that's classic of fascism is to mobilize white supremacy, patriarchy, militarism, colonialism, and all of these projects as a way of trying to cut down resistance and trying to co-opt resistance. The dream that we get from Trump and from his administration of a white ethno-state and this new militarism and colonialism, the goal here seems to be to appropriate part of the white working class that's being crushed, to connect them through this vision of sort of white superiority to increasingly squeezed members of the small business owners, petite bourgeoisie, and to mobilize those forces behind the police, behind finance and corporate capital, precisely in order to crush the threat of resistance that's growing and growing. And so, some examples of this seem to be, the increasing reliance of someone like Trump on the police and his fetishization of police violence, the return of this administration to really championing mass incarceration. And just, as a hot topic today, the violence with which the administration is going against the J20, the people involved in J20 actions. I think this is a great example of this increasing pressure to try against precisely the forces of revolt that neoliberalism itself calls forth.
Right. Another example would be Jeff Sessions, saying, let's go after people that smoke weed again. Who controls the Department of Justice, who is, going after the J20 defendants. Later on, you state, quote, all of this means anarchists are poised to play a powerful role in helping organize a radical challenge to fascism rise in the oppressive society that requires fascism to function. But radical struggle is deeply fractured and reactive. Later, you state the radical left is beginning to congeal into a more radical form, but remains deeply divided. So I guess our question would be, does this mean anarchists are only poised to intervene in the context of rising fascism? And also, how would you argue that radical struggle is deeply fractured exactly?
Yeah, sure. So what I had in mind here was to put this in a historical context, is that with the rise of neoliberalism, we have what I call the shattering of the radical left. We have this incredible violence of state repression, in addition to a restructuring of the economy, all designed to break down resistance. And what happens to the left, because of this external pressure, is this sort of siloing of movements. Movements are turned against each other. They're made suspicious of each other. And folks more and more, I think, tend to become involved in sort of their own projects, and it becomes more and more difficult to organize on a mass scale. But I also think that shattering emerged as the result of an internal pressure, too. I think that something new started to happen, or something very interesting at least started to happen in the 60s and 70s, when there was this explosion of really interesting, intersectional and diverse and very radical movements. People of color, women of color, feminism, the indigenous struggles, working class struggles, students, and the
Panthers, AIM.
Go ahead. And so these folks overlapping in interesting ways, student movements crossing over a lot of these boundaries in interesting ways. But the existing organizational structures, like the social relations of rebellion, weren't really able to accommodate these exploding forces of revolt. You know, a lot of the organizing power was around in the old left, and even in the new left had this emphasis on like top-down organizing bureaucracy that resembled a lot of the shit that we're seeing in capitalism, reproducing these structures. And so these forces of revolt were sort of shattering and moving beyond these restrictive organizational structures. But on the other side of that, I think we've been having a hard time figuring out what the next thing would look like organizationally. So what would it look like to take all of these incredible forces that are again emerging and starting to converge? And what would it look like for them to develop mass, durable, radical, and effective organizational structures? So that's kind of what I mean by the shattering of the left and kind of where we are now. As far as fascism goes, that's why I think there's something really interesting in this moment for anarchists. So, in this, I kind of speak for myself because we're not an anarchist group, strictly speaking, but I do identify as an anarchist myself, that in neoliberalism and the shattering of the left, anarchism offers this incredible set of resources for beginning to negotiate what it looks like for the left to be divided in movements like the Global Justice Movement, Occupy 15M, and elsewhere. Anarchists played a role because they had this sense of, well, we can organize without hierarchies. There are these other experiments that we can try to move these groups closer together. And there were limits there, but it was quite interesting. So anarchism, but not just anarchism, I think women of color feminism has been doing this for a really long time as well, have these resources for saying, okay, the old organizational hierarchical structures, they're delegitimated for some really good reasons. What else is out there? Well, these are these other ways of doing things that could help us. So in that sense, I think anarchists are poised to offer these experimental ways of congealing the radical groups and the radical left in ways that a lot of other groups may not quite have as much. But I also think anarchists have something super important and interesting to bring to the struggle against fascism too. I'm thinking of the fact that, I mean, this is anarchism has a set of traditions from, you know, Spain in the mid to late 30s, very different context, but this is a set of traditions that that anarchist organizations, anarchists can draw on. The fact that in the punk scene in the 80s and early 90s, a sort of anarcho-punk aesthetic and politics was at the forefront of punching back against the rise of neo-Nazis again. These are all traditions that that survive in like anarchist bookstores and info spaces and that are being revived again by anarchists. So I think there is something really special and something really important in this moment for specifically anarchist struggle for sure.
Well, in the next question, we're going to kind of get into, you know, maybe what you mean, what we mean, what any of us mean by the left, and this kind of, I think we're kind of dancing around often this question of left unity. But you lay out in your proposal in the text, quote, calls for something else, creating radical hybrid councils of delegates from the most radical anarchist and non-anarchist groups in the city for the sake of an experimental, federated, direct action-oriented system. So we feel like a question here is this a call for left unity? If so, we wonder why people are worrying about uniting about different groups of small Marxist sects that, you know, really have nothing really in common politically with anarchists. You know, they want to build a political party. They might want to be a sort of lobby group for the Democratic Party and in some DSA, you know, groups as an example of that sometimes, even now, we would argue that what makes this period exciting is that struggles and working class movements are coming up against, you know, much of the left, you know, union bureaucracy, NGOs, and they're pushing beyond that. I mean, if you look at like the strikes in West Virginia, they're interesting because they're coming up against the union bureaucracy and pushing beyond it. I guess we would ask if this is a call for left unity, I don't know if it is, but why would we do that as opposed to building up organs of mass working class action, for instance, like Autonomous Tenants Union in Chicago or the Burgerville Workers Union in the Pacific Northwest and so on and so forth?
Yeah, that's great. I see where you're coming from. This is a great question. But, you know, in terms of developing some sort of what I'm calling congeal and solidifying of the radical left, one of the things I want to keep in mind and that I think is really important as a lesson from like Occupy and global justice movement and other things is that, I don't see this as a call for kind of left unity in a broad sense. It's always about radical left unity. I think it's important not to do what Occupy and in some sense the global justice movement did is mistake numbers for strength. Right? It's so having liberals in a group can make the numbers bigger, but it also significantly and very powerfully weakens a group's orientation when it's able to do, creates all sorts of horrible infighting. I had some horrible experiences with this as part of the anti-DNC protests in 2016 in Philly here. I think it's really important to have something like a minimum radical program, something that says, you know, the goal is not to work with everybody. The goal is to work with people who are like-minded in some fundamental way. And I would think of this program in terms of something like, and a lot of groups have done this either de facto or kind of more formally. It's this idea that says, listen, we want to work with people who are anti-capitalist. We want to work with people who reject domination and all of its intersectional and combining forms. But then beyond that, yeah, I see this very much in line. I see this call for a kind of unity very much in line with what you're saying, exactly how you said it. It's about building mass popular radical power in terms of the working class, in terms of community groups. So I have – there's this list in section two of this zine. And, you know, there I just sort of throw out there, okay, who are some of the important groups that we might want to work with? This is really contextual from city to city or place to place. But, you know, Burgerville is this incredible example of non-bureaucratized radical worker struggle. And it's connected to a group IWW that doesn't really neatly fit into either anarchist or Marxist kind of political boxes. And this is exactly the kind of struggle that you would want to connect with, right? Something that's able to challenge the constant blind drive of monopoly capital to extract surplus value, right? And community groups like in Philly, for us to put it contextually, it's really important to work with groups like, there's radical anti-prison, police abolitionist, prison abolitionist groups like Philly for Real Justice, Decarcerate PA. They're doing incredibly important work here, and they're rooted in communities and doing some really great stuff here. And so the goal would be to try to find a way for folks who are struggling in those ways to other folks, insurrectionary, anarchists, radical leftists beyond that, that are still quite radical, still willing to challenge the basic structures of capitalism, but that might still be siloed in this kind of shattered state that we're in. So I think, I think that working with any and all Marxists and Stalinists and Maoists, I agree that's kind of a problem and we don't want to go there. But contextually, you can imagine a situation where one of the major kind of forces in a situation, in a community, in a school, is maybe a well-organized communist group or communist-leading group. And so, if this is a group that's open to being kind of non-dogmatic, I think there is some interesting room for connecting that group to maybe radical worker struggles and anarchists, right? But I also want to say, listen, not every group is going to get along with every other. And the lesson of global justice movement, the lesson of Occupy is let's not try to force them, right? Just combining liberals and radicals is a lost proposition. I have really, at this point anyway, no interest in them at all.
Right. I guess our point would be, one of the reasons we think Occupy exploded was because, it wasn't just the same old lefties and activists kind of like acting as gatekeepers. It was this explosion of people being excited about a set of tactics and practices and wanting to kind of, do that, and everybody saw that. And that's what really just opened the floodgates, was just a lot of people coming in. People that were homeless, people, that were already politically engaged, people that were foreclosed on, all that stuff. So I guess, just to come. I think we're agreeing with each other in some instances and maybe disagreeing with each other. But I guess the question is for like for young people or people that are kind of new to the game that are looking to kind of, you know, maybe get beyond, you know, that first, you know, anti-fascist mobilization. Okay, they've done that. Now what? So is the tech saying to them, you need to go out and find, you know, the 10 people in DSA and, you know, the 5 people in the RCP and like have a meeting with them once a week? Or is it to kind of build something else that's more community based, it's autonomous of any other groups, you know, it's based in the community? I mean, what is kind of the marching orders? And we're going to kind of get into that later, but.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, I think that for a radical left strategy to be effective, I think it has to be community based. And I think the first step is to recognize the piece tries to do is to say that there are lots of super interesting and really radical people all over, radical groups all over that are doing incredible. And it's easy to I think sometimes to miss this when we're working in our own groups, or if we're, like you're saying, a young person that's interested in getting involved and, you know, we can dive into one project versus another. But because of how siloed I think sometimes these struggles are, it's easy to miss just how vibrant and interesting the kind of radical left ecology is in a city like Chicago or Philly or beyond. So, you know, so I don't see this at all in terms of marching orders, but rather as a sense of sort of almost a kind of humility, a kind of stepping back and saying, listen, there's some super rad people doing some great stuff. And so if there's advice for young people or advice for myself or something, it's like, okay, well, we're involved in particular struggles, particular groups, and that's fantastic. Okay, so how do we also not only get involved in what I would call then a kind of first order organizing, right? The particular groups organizing around particular struggles, which is crucial. It's building power. It's rooted in communities when it's at its best. How do we also connect that to what I would call a kind of second order or like meta organizing or something, to use a kind of a shitty phrase, and to say, okay, so now how do we also ask, what would it look like to connect these groups and to share the knowledge, the experience, to share the writings, the tactical and strategic points that all of these groups are doing so well, but that so many of us are like reinventing the wheel on every time, you know, we're kind of involved in our own little silo. So I think it's working on multiple levels then, right? So the sort of initial level of let's get involved with the most radical people we can around the causes that we're most passionate about. And then also asking how to make the connections to other groups who are doing super freaking rad stuff. And learn from each other and recognize we're not the only ones doing this. And we have a ton to learn from each other. And how do we start sharing that stuff and start working together and a little more? And there are places that this is definitely happening. Right. And I'll just add something to that just really quickly. I think it's helpful to think about things in terms of like steps as well, right? To think about this in terms of something that's developing in terms of a radical process. Like, I absolutely have nothing against Occupy. It was one of these moments for me that was absolutely radicalizing, super important. I started really working with Etienne here in a serious way, an activist way, and Occupy, met the folks that I'm doing this project with in Occupy. But, you know, it's also worth saying, okay, so how do we take that next step? Occupy was fantastic for taking like the question of inequality and politicizing it again, and driving tons of interesting projects that have happened afterwards. But then, you know, one of the weaknesses I think of Occupy that maybe we wouldn't know unless we did it and just move and had to move on afterwards is that, well, it was a project of combining radicals and non-radicals as a project of creating a sort of citywide council of individuals rather than a coordinating groups. And so the next step for us then becomes, well, maybe we need to think of things in terms of steps or in terms of a process, right? Maybe, you know, I'm sort of convinced that one of the most important things we can do is build a super rad left that's as coordinated as can be and that shares a kind of radical, vibrant culture. And then to use that as the fulcrum, or use that as the force that then does what Occupy was sort of an interesting flashpoint for, to start attracting in and start being appealing to this sort of liberal or left-leaning but still not radicalized group. And the reason why I think that's important is, if we build up this core a bit more and there's great places where this is happening, then we become a kind of center of gravity that draws people left-leaning and far, but farther kind of towards the center, towards us, rather than starting from a more kind of more diluted group in which radical folks inevitably sort of get pulled more to the right or pulled more to the center. Because there are more of these sort of liberal folks, there are more of these left-leaning but not radicalized folks, so that is where the center of gravity is now. It's just about building a kind of more of a critical mass that can have its own kind of gravity field around it.
Mm-hmm. Later in the piece, you write, quote, "The aim is a more vibrant, intersectional, and coordinated federation of revolutionary groups." Obviously, if anybody that looks at It's Going Down sees that, you know, there's people writing from Earth First, Redneck Revolt, GDC, Anarchist Black Cross, Apolista Circles, Wobblies, Insurrectionists, you know, so on and so forth. You know, a lot of different types of tendencies, people from, varying backgrounds, from autonomous to anti-state communists. And I think, I think when, you know, we do come together in big ways, such as, you know, I think the prison strike in 2016 is a really big example. We can do some big things. But I feel like maybe that's one of the things that I do like about the piece, is that it talks about kind of all these different groups at least trading notes with each other. So one of the things you brought up, I really agree with, is, you know, reinventing the wheel, you know, each group trying to basically do the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, these groups that you're bringing up, I mean, these are the inspiration for saying, you know, there's so much that these groups are doing and saying and writing and developing. There's this entire kind of history of what works, knowledge, experience, what works and what doesn't, that that becomes really explosive and really interesting when it starts to combine. And, and so one way of thinking about this kind of call for like a greater radical left unity is in terms of like this thing that we lost in the last couple 20 years or so, a kind of base infrastructure, as sort of loosely centralized infrastructure for trading these ideas in some kind of established and kind of well-recognized way. I'm thinking of like in the global justice movement, that really was on the rise at the same time that independent media centers were starting to proliferate and kind of infect all sorts of different cities. We had a really great one, a vibrant one in Philly for a while, and they were all over.
But if I can just interject, I mean, if we go back to the, you know, the so-called global justice movement or the anti-globalization period, I think what was happening there was there was a massive groundswell of autonomous, you know, more or less anti-state, anti-capitalist. I mean, there was an agreement across the board that government has failed. The Zapatistas came out, this, you know, kind of weird mix of Marxism and anarchism. You know, Marcos famously said, you know, "I shit on the vanguards of the world." You know, there was a turn away from building political parties, and it was all about grassroots movements and social struggles and autonomous power. And I think that, you know, if something like what you're talking about would be put into effect, I mean, again, adding that politic to it of, you know, that we are autonomous from the state, we're autonomous from, you know, NGOs and union bureaucracies, and we're here to build, you know, this grassroots from the bottom up power, I think would be very important, as opposed to like, you know, yeah, and we're going to hold hands with, you know, people that want to lead us back into the left wing of the Democratic Party, which I don't think is true, even though we might find ourselves in the street with those people from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the global justice movement, for exactly the reason you're talking about it, is a really interesting case study to look at, in the sense that, I mean, these groups, radical working groups and ecological struggles, groups that traditionally have been fairly opposed or at least working in separate spheres, there was this kind of combination in the global justice movement, this really interesting way that then wound up like in 1999 in Seattle being like short-circuited by the union bureaucracy. But it was this kind of combination that created this explosive power, right? The Battle of Seattle. And so one way of thinking about what we're calling insurrectionary councilism is this attempt to develop that kind of kernel, develop that kind of explosive combination of a radical left, of an independent of the state, anti-domination, you know, anti, you know, reformist struggle that's able to take what we learned in these earlier struggle earlier moments and to build them and develop them, but also to do it in a way that's a bit more offensive and a bit more on the attack. I think Etienne said earlier. Then something like the global justice movement that tended to converge on these summits, right? Okay, so the question it seems to me to be, all right, so what would it look like to do this explosive combinatory practice in a way that is building itself autonomously instead of waiting for global capital or the state to call the shots, and to do it in a way that also opens it up to saying, okay, listen, we don't really know what the organizational project is in the future for radicals, right? But let's start doing this combination and let's see what emerges, right? This is this idea of like emergent strategy. Let's start throwing this stuff together, the most interesting and radical groups together. Let's try to create these kinds of explosions, this sort of insurrectionary explosions that we got before. And then let's find tools to latch onto those experiences and to institutionalize them in a certain kind of radical, non-hierarchical way going forward, to keep building and building and building.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about some of these terms you just brought up. But in laying out the essay, you talk, you know, obviously it's termed insurrectionary councilism. You mentioned the need to create, quote, movement councils. Could you explain exactly what these would be in theory and what would they look like?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start by saying a lot of this was rooted in my experiences with Etienne and others in Occupy, and then the experiences I was having in the abortive 2016 anti-DNC protest that just basically fizzled in terms of what the sort of DNC action committee was supposed to be doing. And there were some folks doing interesting stuff, but it was not that – it really failed in terms of the council. There was a first meeting where there was this kind of interesting idea floating in the air that would create some sort of radical coalition. It was called, and we met in the space where there were some of the most interesting and powerful anti-racist, anti-prison, anti-police, anti-capitalist groups in the room. What wound up happening is there was this increasing emphasis that by the people who wound up sort of rising to the coordinating committee that said, no, we got to make sure we're working with people who are pro Bernie. We got to make sure we're working with people who are working with the Democratic Party. We have to make sure that we're open to liberals joining. And the thing got so completely washed out that at the end, people were objecting using the word protest. They had to call themselves an action committee. So it was this insane sort of experience. And something like this was repeated in different ways in Occupy. So, okay, what does it look like to do a radical movement council? So it would not be that. The goal would be to build, and slowly and in small ways and ways that people are doing in all sorts of places, to start getting some of the most delegates from the most radical groups in a city, in a locale, in a school, sitting down and talking to each other and sharing information, sharing their archives, sharing their ideas, tactics, strategies, and then asking, how do we help each other? And the goal, right? So this looks in some ways like global justice movement, Occupy, whatever, right? But the goal then would be to also say, how do we also try to create a kind of shared revolutionary culture among these groups, right? How do we then not simply operate as a spokes council, which is a powerful weapon to have, but how do we go beyond the spokes council model and to say something like, all right, how do we see ourselves as somehow coordinated in a deeper way, in a more connected way, right? So how do we see ourselves as part of some sort of intersectional and larger movement? And there's lots more to say about that, obviously. And there's huge danger in saying, like, we can put sort of map this out beforehand, right? But it's a sort of experimental, sort of, provocative thing to just throw out there and to think about, a kind of set of questions to practice with. or to explore more.
So you use the term emergent strategy. Just real quick, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I'm taking that directly from Adrienne Murray Brown. So she's the person behind there's this book of Octavius Brood. She's one of the folks behind this. Movement science fiction. She's got a book called Emergent Strategy. And I tend to think that this is one of the more important concepts that the radical left has come up with in recent years. And I'm using it in something of a different way than Adrienne Murray Brown is. But the idea is that I don't view this zine as like, this is the answer. Like, all right, just go out there. We're going to create this fucking utopia. Just follow the plan and we'll be fantastic. Absolutely not. I think we have to say that as radicals, as anarchists, we're in a kind of intermediate place. The radical left was like shattered in the 60s and 70s. We're still recovering from this. We're doing it in some ways. But we've sort of burst through the old ways, the old sort of force relations of organizing, and we've got these incredible sort of forces of rebellion burgeoning and exploding in all sorts of interesting places, Ferguson and anti-police actions, anti-capitalist stuff. But I don't think we have a clear sense yet of what like a mass, radical, revolutionary, anti-capitalist, and destabilizing organizational structure would look like. That's able to harness these and be driven by these forces, right? That's going to be adequate to these forces of rebellion. So, like Marx says someplace, right, that like human beings only set for themselves such tasks as like they can solve, and that's I just don't think that's true, right? We have sort of we've got these incredible forces that are exploding, but we don't yet know what the adequate organizational strategies would look like. So the goal, I think, one of the most important things we can do, and that folks are starting to do, is then to ask not how do we organize correctly, right? How do we organize in the most efficient or most radical, whatever way? The goal then becomes how do we create the laboratories, the sort of intermediate ways, experiments out of which better, more radical, more mass, more destabilizing organizational structures could emerge, right? And that's what I mean by an emergent strategy. It's like insurrectionary councilism, not as the answer, but as a kind of ladder that like if we went up it and were able to use it, it might be something that like if it was successful, we just throw the ladder away, right? This becomes useless if I think it works the way it's maybe it could. How do we create experiments where we're just trying some shit out with some of the most radical folks who've been divided from each other for too long, right? How do we do these explosive sort of insurrectionary direct action and beyond combinations and then learn from them and develop them into better organizational strategies going forward? Like what would a machine look like that could harness that power a little better and transmit it to the future a little better?
Yeah. Well, I think that's it's a beautiful question. It's definitely, the kind of conversation we need to be having right now. In the text, you argue for federations, something that, by and large, we haven't seen within the anarchist movement in the past couple of decades, although we have, lots of broad networks. I think a question would be, in 2018, why should there be a federation and what would that look like? And moreover, what would a federation do now that all the multitude of networks that exist now don't currently do?
Yeah, right. I'll see if Etienne wants to dive in because this is one of the points that he and I were talking about in an early draft of this. You want to say anything about federation and its importance?
Yeah, I might just say that the idea of federation is not necessarily one of a kind of unification across movements, but instead understanding federation as operating often at different levels and also having different temporalities, so that with certain groups, a federation might be operative or work well within a particular circumscribed struggle, but that at other levels, those groups might end up parting ways. So I don't think that we need a kind of, or that the ways in which we've been talking about it in red is that we don't need some type of unifying blueprint for all groups or something along those lines, but instead different forms of kind of nested federations in which, yeah, with Maoists, we can work on this project, and with IWW, we can work on another project. And that those aspects of federation then are something like static ways of combining groups, but instead they are ways for us to learn from and develop what Art was referring to as emergent strategies. And so the Federation is not something that just exists. It's something that itself is part of an ongoing process of reiteration over time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we say this over and over again, but I mean, there's a, you know, there's a difference between just being in an organization and actually being organized. And, you know, one of the tasks now is like physically being able to do things. And that sounds like really simple, but it means like, you know, there's a wildcat strike going on in this state. Who do we have there that can actually do anything? That can talk to workers, can hand out flyers, can, you know, organize food, anything like that. And if we don't not only have the contacts, but actually have the organizational capacity in whatever form, whether that's friendship circles or people on a mailing list, I mean, we can't do anything. And, you know, I think the other big question is how to take all these different groups, all these moving parts, and put it together, you know, as a weapon.
I think just quickly on the first point, you're absolutely right that the kind of circles that any group or organization will form around itself are very important. And to have concentric circles in which you can build out and have, you know, eventually reach somebody who might be on the ground involved in a particular struggle, and you can link that back to your core groups in various ways. But precisely one of the points that you're highlighting is also one of the things that we're, you know, interested in trying to take on as much as possible. And I know that you are as well. And that is, well, how can we extend our organizational power so that in circumstances like this, we do have contacts on the ground? And so we've been reaching out not only regionally, but also nationally and internationally, so that we try to connect to the massive student protests that have been going on in France, to the radical kind of anti-veiling protests and mobilization that's been going on in Iran and elsewhere. And some of those connections end up being based just on the, you know, particular you know, modes of contact that we have now, but we'd really like to develop those concentric circles so that even people who aren't working directly with us can nonetheless be a kind of ally on the ground or can federate with us in a particular struggle. But Art, you want to jump in on this too?
Yeah, I think this is such a, I mean, absolutely kind of like the rubber meets the road in terms of how do you fucking build a radical organization. I mean, federation in some ways is like the most difficult task. But I love what you were saying in terms of keeping it super practical. I mean, if we're talking about federation, at some level, we might just mean at first having some place or some group of people with some contacts that can preserve security culture, but still be able to say, all right, you want to get in touch with X, Y, and Z. You want to sort of have this happen in this city, and this city. All right, these folks can help enable this to happen. And, you know, and we absolutely need to be to be doing this in the sense that, I mean, capital is national and international, and so it has to be challenged on its own terrain. And the sort of international radical vision that we got from this from Zapatissimo is exactly recognizing I think this kind of thing. And so right, so to keep it practical, right, I think we mean context. I think we mean developing just some loose kind of way of throwing information out there and saying let's coordinate an attack, right? Having some possibility of like a convergence, right? People talking on the phone every once in a while to prepare for some sort of like for May Day or something like this. There are folks doing that, but spreading it a bit more. You know, one of the dreams I have is sort of for the radical education department, right? Is, you know, we're pretty rooted in on-campus struggles, and there's tons of folks from the Filler Collective to Cutting Class to the Autonomous Student Movement and well beyond who are doing really great stuff. And so developing sort of federating between these groups, one of the things that would mean is being able to maybe find some way and funds to just the people in Pennsylvania who are doing this shit to sit down at some point and say, let's plan out the year together. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
You know, particularly at the state level for education, you know, we want to talk about public universities, the disbursement of state funds to colleges and those kinds of things. But
let me just on real quick. One of the things that's great about this conversation is the fact that you reached out to us in order to get this whole thing started. And so we really appreciate that gesture and would just want it to, you know, to multiply as much as possible across these rad groups who are doing really, really great things so that we can then build together in the future and create more of these types of contacts. And this can be through signal boosting and things like this, but then also, you know, over time, then you can coordinate it more and more with collaborative projects, with direct actions together and things along these lines.
Right.
So,
right. And the more and more we map things out, the more and more easier it is, at least in theory, for new people to kind of come on board and get, you know, brought up to speed. Now, you mentioned in the piece some groups that are already kind of doing this type of stuff. You mentioned Metropolitan Anarchist Coordinating Council and SCAM. Can you just talk about some of these groups that are kind of already starting to do this? And, you know, how are they putting these ideas into practice already?
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, just like we were sort of saying, like IGD is this important sort of way of sort of building these sort of contacts. And federate, sort of federating them in the same way. I think it's so important to recognize how many interesting and radical groups are out there doing some super rad stuff. And so, like the Metropolitan Anarchist Coordinating Council, right? My understanding is that they got their start around mobilizing to get ready for the J20 shit in D.C. And you know, some of the interesting things that they were doing was so they tend to kind of concentrate on, okay, how do we coordinate and connect the anarchist scene in New York, which is like no small task whatsoever, and it's a really sprawling task. So, you know, so right off the bat, MAC became this place and is and serves as this place where information, but not just information, starts getting centralized in this really interesting way and shared out in this really interesting way. It becomes a place where the folks from these very different kind of anarchist circles are able to meet and talk to each other to coordinate who's taking a carpool down to Washington for the J20 events, to coordinate resources, money, beds, whatever it is. So it becomes this engine that's able to sort of take all of this kind of more diffuse and really important work that individuals and groups are doing in New York and start combining it and pointing it at things and pointing that energy at things. And I think that's super important. Shout out a few others. The Steel City Autonomous Movement is doing this in interesting ways as well. Like in Pittsburgh, and you know, I can't say a ton about this, but I can say that SCAM, the acronym for this group, winds up being this place where some of the really important collective work that needs to get done on the anarchist scene is getting done. So there's this really important anarcho-feminist group there, the Nightshade Collective, that was really instrumental from what I'm hearing from one of my comrades there, really instrumental in helping folks in calling out patriarchal bullshit on that scene and helping the folks there to challenge it, to shut it down and to reformulate itself in a healthier and more radical way. And so just the fact that there is this kind of centralized place where super important groups like Nightshade Collective can do that work and can sort of critique, attack, that reformulate and reconfigure in better and healthier ways is, I think really important. And of course, that's not to say that this is all to say that it was the Nightshade Collective that was able to do that work and able to point the way towards changes of things.
Right. Well, we all need to be trying to reach out beyond ourselves and trying to link up regionally and statewide if we can. And I think regionally is very important because, you know, that's where kind of the power lies. Like, you know, where can you be in 4 hours? Where can you be, you know, if you get off work and you've got an hour to get somewhere, you know, where can you be in your city? But just moving forward, several times in the text you mentioned the anti-fascist mobilization in Michigan against Richard Spencer as an example of these kind of politics being foreshadowed. I'm just curious, you know, what exactly about that mobilization makes you think that?
Yeah, you know, there's something really interesting about the anti-Spencer shit that went down in Michigan. And one of them is how community-based it wound up being in some important ways. And again, just like, you know, I'm at a distance from Pittsburgh. I'm at a distance from Michigan. So it's important to recognize that there's folks there that can speak about this stuff much better than I can. But, in Michigan, we found this kind of groundswell connection between a more militant, and, edge of a kind of anarchist scene and of a radical and militant scene, an Antifa that was at the same time able to connect to and mobilize community groups that are doing that perhaps would not have been willing to step up and to try to shut down a Nazi like Spencer, but there became this sort of explosive and interesting combination that was able to do that work. So that's one of the reasons this sort of community base and also its success at shutting down Spencer. And moreover, I think there's something really interesting about Antifa in this moment too. For the first time in a really long time, more militant tactics are being seen as really important, right? Punching a Nazi, shutting down the speech, offering no platform for the radical right is being recognized as super important work that needs to get done. And I think we should recognize that is a real groundswell, a real difference from like 1999 in Seattle when everybody was kind of losing their minds because some windows got broken. So there's this sort of change that's happening in the left's on the radical left, or I think in the way the radical left is being perceived, that's opening up these new possibilities for not only militant but also broad-based struggle. And so this is one of the reasons a couple of reasons I keep going back to the Michigan action.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. Is there anything else that you want to bring up or talk about? This has been a great conversation. We could talk about this stuff for another 2 hours. There's so many other places we could take this. Any other things that we need to hit on that you feel in this conversation?
Well, I might just hit on the connection between all the things that we've been discussing and then our kind of project at Red, and kind of let your audience know that if people want to get involved with this, if you're working with radical groups, if you want to send us a report back, articles, coordinate directly with us, become one of our allies, etc., go to our website, reach out to us. We'd love to get connected in various ways. And the other thing is that we're going to do a series on coalition building that largely comes out of a lot of these ideas and the kind of strategy piece that Art wrote at the Wooden Shoe here in Philadelphia. And we'll kind of post those online afterwards. But it's going to be part of this kind of ongoing experimental process of radical coalition building. And so I'm sure we're going to learn a lot from it. And if others want to get involved with that, then by all means, reach out.
Right.
And I just want to add, this is a super helpful conversation for me, working through these ideas and hearing your take on things. And a huge thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I would add is that I think that, let's continue to think, too, about what it would mean to intervene and, just the collapsing crisis of capitalist civilization. I mean, beyond just responding to fascists or, a big summit mobilization, let's develop our collective capacity to respond to what's happening in Flint, Michigan, to respond to what's happening, all around us, this infrastructure breaking down, this society, continuing to, offer, Trump and everything else that he represents. And just to think, what would that look like? Because I think that's really kind of the direction that, will create a very real political crisis in the sense that everyday people start to meet their own needs and, will really create some ruptures that we can start to maneuver in.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.